Call Back the Past.
And now, over to your editor, Percy Seath.
Thank you, and good evening. 1931 saw Britain go off the gold standard, closely followed by Japan. Though television had already developed considerably, the finish of the Derby race was recorded on TV, the BBC was more concerned with radio, and in 1931, particularly with their lack of funds to expand their shortwave transmissions to the Empire.
Now, broadcasting to the Empire was a splendid idea, but there was one drawback. Who would pay for it? One idea was for the Empire to pay, or help pay for the programmes it was receiving, by adopting a licensing system and sending a portion of the money to Britain. Although the Empire, dominions and colonies were delighted to receive programmes from Britain, they did not take so easily to the idea of raising money to pay for them. Appeals to the Treasury only brought the reply that no part of the cost of an Empire service should fall on the British taxpayer. In 1931, after long arguments with the Treasury, the BBC decided to go it alone.
In South Africa, the predecessor to the SABC, the privately owned African Broadcasting Company, was also battling to stay out of financial trouble. Nevertheless, listeners received their regular programs and music, which included the latest hit from England as Gracie Fields sang... Empress Eugenie style hats, transparent mesh stockings, and the card game bridge were all the rage in 1931, a year in which Martha Graham's Modern Dance Company was receiving much attention in America. In England, the old Sadler's Wells Theatre was reopened to house the Sadler Wells Ballet. Some years ago, pioneer Ninette de Valois recalled,
"I remember the very first time I saw Sadler's Wells Theatre in its half-finished state. I came there with Miss Lillian Bayliss, and as we walked up the narrow little side street, a great black rat of Islington shot across our feet. And I thought to myself, this is a grim introduction. I think the most remarkable thing is to look at that night, or rather that whole year, and realize that we started with six young girls dancing in the Sadler's Wells Opera Ballets. And today the Royal Ballet is 126 dancers strong."
Minor sensation in 1931's literary world was an incident at a public dinner when Theodore Dreiser twice slapped fellow author Sinclair Lewis's face. Dreiser's 1931 book, The Dawn, was joined in the bookshops by William Faulkner's The Sanctuary and Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Pearl Buck, The Good Earth. In America, the Star-Spangled Banner was declared the official national anthem, and Arthur Tracy, also known as the Street Singer, recorded this hit song. The Union of South Africa was given full freedom of legislation in 1931, which was also the year in which Pretoria was declared a city. In Spain, the formation of a republic followed the departure of King Alfonso XIII, while London saw its first trolley bus. And in England, the first meeting of the Prince of Wales and Mrs. Wallace Simpson, the woman for whom he would 5 years later abdicate the throne. The couple recalled their impressions of that first meeting.
Mrs. Simpson and I first met over a weekend at the House of Friends near Melton Mowbray in Leicestershire. She had a terrible cold and was not feeling or looking her best. Our first conversation was surprisingly stilted and banal, and it ranged from the lack of central heating in British country homes and the ruggedness of the British climate.
After our first meeting, I didn't see him again until the following spring. Then we met occasionally in the houses of friends.
From the first, I looked upon her as the most independent woman I had ever met. And presently, the hope formed that one day I might be able to share my life with her. Just how, I did not know.
The world's tallest building at the time, the 102-floor Empire State Building, was opened in 1931, a year in which Henry Ford's 20-millionth car rolled off the assembly line to be parked in a museum next to the first model ever made. And in the year of the isolation of vitamin A by O.P. Carra and Jacob Sheik's electric razor, the world of science mourned the passing of the father of the electric lights and the gramophone, Thomas Alva Edison.
After you've grown, babe, and left me crying, after you're gone, there's no use denying, you'll feel blue, you'll feel sad, you'll miss the dearest pal you've ever had. There'll come a time, now don't forget it, babe, there'll come a time when you regret it. Someday, when you grow lonely, your heart will break like mine and you want me only. After you go, after you go away.
The violin of Joe Venuti, Eddie Lang's guitar, and the voice of Jack Teagarden in a 1931 recording of After You've Gone. The year provided triumphs for South Africa at sport. The Springbok cricket team at home to the MCC won the first test and drew the other four to win the series, then went to New Zealand to win both tests there. In Australia, however, the Boks were soundly beaten by 5-0. The rugby Springboks to Great Britain fared extremely well under the captaincy of Benny Osler to win all their tests. There were soccer tests, too, against the visiting Motherwell team, which proved too good for the South Africans. Tommy Mitchell, who played in all 3 tests, was selected for South Africa in a very unusual way.
Yes, it was at the Old King's Meet. I went in to watch the match Motherwell versus South Africa. This was in 1931.
Yes.
And Harvey from the Eastern Provinces got injured on the Thursday in a tryout. And the board went round. Mitchell wanted in the dressing room. So I went to the dressing room and we eventually finished up down at the hotel. I was given a quick check over by the trainer. And that was my first outing for them.
And so you played for South Africa on that day, although you went as a paying spectator and ended up playing.
That's right. I lost my half a crown, too.
Is that so? They didn't give it back to
No.
you?
No.
Well, I suppose if they had, you would become a professional. Mr. Mitchell, tell me, I believe you scored the only goal for South Africa as well, isn't it?
Yes, Motherwell beat us 3-1, but I was lucky in this respect that I never played centre forward at that particular match. But I played next to my clubmate, Billy Hamilton. And we knew one another's play very well.
The voice of Marlene Dietrich in 1931. A year which provided fine theatrical fare, among others, Noel Coward's Private Lives and Eugene O'Neill's Morning Becomes Electra. Fine musicals, too, including The Cat and the Fiddle and Bandwagon.
Dancing in the dark, till the tune ends, we're dancing in the dark, and it soon ends, we're waltzing in the wonder of why we're here.
At the movies, Warner Oland with his first appearance as Charlie Chan in Charlie Chan Carries On, Charlie Chaplin in City Lights, Irene Dunne in Cimarron, and Edward G. Robinson, heard now with Stanley Fields in the soundtrack from Little Caesar.
I want to roll with your ma if you'll let me. What do you say? You won't be sorry for letting me in, Mr. Vittori. I'll shoot square with you. I'll do anything you say. I ain't afraid of nothing.
Well, you think you're a hard guy, huh?
Well, there's nothing soft about me, nothing yellow. I don't quit.
You got an idea you're good, huh?
Well, give me a chance to show you.
I guess you're good with a rod, too, huh?
Yeah, quick with it, that's what I got. Sure.
Back the Past was devised and presented by Percy Seath and comes to you by courtesy of the Springbok Radio Preservation Society of South Africa.